Okay, I don't have a gavel to bang, but we'll bang. Today's the regular board meeting of the Benton County Commissioners, Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, 9 a.m. Please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Next, we'll have the approval of the minutes for March 28th and April 2nd.
I'll move to approve the meeting minutes for March 28th, 2024, and special meeting April 2nd, 2024.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes. Review of the agenda. I know I want to add something to other business. We have Paul here to show us some slides about the wind farm. And we also then have to add Greg or just Michelle's coming up with a letter. Both of you are coming up for the letter to FSEC on the latest comment. Anything else?
Nope.
That's it? Okay. With that, we'll have a public comment. And Mary Lou, can you play the...
The purpose of the public comment period is to give the audience an opportunity to provide comments to commissioners regarding agenda items or other topics. It is an official on-the-record communication geared toward giving information and opinions to consider in the decision-making process. While the commissioners welcome hearing from you, please note that the public comment period is not an opportunity for dialogue with commissioners or for posing questions with the expectation of an immediate answer. Many questions require an opportunity for information gathering and deliberation. For this reason, the commissioners will accept comments, but will not directly respond to comments, questions, or concerns raised during the public comment period. Audience members who wish to speak should raise your hand to be called upon by the chairman, or virtual participants use the raise hand feature. Come to the podium, or virtual participants unmute your microphone when called upon. State your name and address for the record. And after speaking, write your name and address on the record sheet. Virtual participants do not complete this step. To allow every participant an opportunity to be heard, public comments will be limited to 3 minutes per speaker. The chairman will indicate when your allowed time has lapsed. In the interest of running an orderly meeting, we ask that you do not duplicate comments made by a previous speaker. Instead, please simply confirm your agreement with previous statements. When appropriate, the commissioners may refer an item identified during public comments to the county administrator for further action. Please note that if the speaker intends to give commissioners any records of any kind as a part of a presentation, the records must be handed directly to the clerk of the board for distribution.
Okay. I don't see anyone in Prosser. Anyone here in Kennewick would like to come in front of the board and give public comments? Anyone here in Kennewick? Anyone online? Do you have WebEx on?
No.
Oh. Would you raise your hand if you're on the WebEx and you want to give a comment?
Tim, it looks like Tim has his hand raised.
Oh, Tim Taylor, go ahead. You got 3 minutes.
My name is Tim Taylor. I live in South Richland. Last December, Benton County negotiated a $1.6 million settlement with a family from Prosser because the Benton County Sheriff's Office failed to address 2.5 years of complaints about a package dangerous dogs resulting in a boy and his mother being mauled by the dogs. 3 months later, sheriff's deputies get called out for two loose Rottweilers who were a family's pets and had never shown signs of aggression. Their response was to use their assault rifles to kill both of them the moment they came into range, and a disgusting display of callousness and laugh about what they did. In response to killing these dogs, the sheriff put out a press release saying that this is going to review their policy about dealing with loose dogs. Thousands and thousands of people in Benton County own pets. Some of those pets get loose and wander away from home. Sometimes irresponsible people allow their pets to become aggressive and then let them roam threatening. There has to be a solution to this. It lies somewhere between doing nothing and killing any dog that gets out of its yard. The Benton County Sheriff's Office obviously has no policy about dealing with loose dogs to review, and I don't think they should be trusted with this responsibility. The county commissioners need to relieve Benton County Sheriff's Office of any duties involving loose dogs, fun, an animal control officer, train professional animal control officers to increase the capacity of the Denton County Canine Shelter. This is something that can and should be done. More than 75% of the county budget, plus an additional $20 million a year from the public safety sales tax, goes to public safety. If you can fund a multitude of extra positions, new equipment, and new construction projects from the sheriff's office, as well as donating tax money to local charities, all with public safety, you've got plenty of staff. Now, on a related note, a week or so ago, the Benton County Canine Shelter had to put out a call for the public to donate food to feed the animals under their care. This is a taxpayer-funded organization. They shouldn't have to get extra help from the public. You've got plenty of tax money. You need to fund the Benton County Canine Shelter, and you need to get some animal control officers on the payroll. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Taylor. Anyone else? Can you see?
Yes, hold on, Mandy.
Who? Mandy?
Yeah, this is me, Mandy Quintera.
Go ahead, Mandy. You have 3 minutes.
Yes, good morning, all. My name is Mandy Cantera. We barely survived here in Kennewick. I'm disabled, pushing 70. My wife is 76 and must work full-time for us to survive and exist. We survive and shelter in an old junk trailer and in a despair. We're both on Social Security, allowing us to survive day to day. Our 2024 property taxes went up 72% over 2023 for a dumpy old trailer. An additional $1,500 that we do not have. We're being robbed. We do not qualify for senior disabled property tax exemption by a few thousand dollars because it's based on a grossly unfair gross income versus adjusted gross income. It's a skewed picture. We propose and beg you guys, all of you people, to change the basis of property tax exemption from gross income to adjusted gross income. Adjusted gross income is realistic, reasonable, and just for senior citizens like us. The gross income is grossly unfair and unrealistic, especially for us. The apparent increase in property taxes are forcing my wife and I, forcing my wife to look for a second job at 76 years old, and I'm considering panhandling. It would be unlawful to extend benefits to us, says the letter from the assessor, because yet it's lawful to rob us like monsters via extortion. We can't pay? They take the property. Like Nazis in Germany, they made killing legal. Doesn't make it right. And I think you folks can make it right. Our existence is being consumed by property taxes, gas tax, carbon tax, sales tax, federal tax, and inflation tax, all of which are destroying us and is not included in gross income. We have to cut food. We have to cut medicine, drop the car insurance for my wife, and the homeowner's insurance. This turnip is squeezed dry. There's nothing left. In conclusion, we propose and beg you, we beg you on our knees to change the basis of property tax exemption for seniors and disabled like us from gross income to adjusted gross income, which gives a more accurate picture. It more accurately portrays our real income versus gross income. So, the property tax exemption, you know, it's either that or we go homeless and live in more despair than we currently are existing in. So thank you for hearing us. Please look at this. Please, please, please consider changing the adjusted gross income basis for the, or the gross income basis for the property tax senior citizen disabled exemption to adjusted gross income. Thank you very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else? Robert, can you see anyone else with a raised hand?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. I'll close public comment and take a motion for the consent agenda, please.
I'll move to go ahead and approve the consent agenda items A through R.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the assent. Assent. God dang it. Where'd it go? Lost it. There we go. Consent agenda items A through R in a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes. Next, scheduled business. Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commission grant. Undersheriff Law, want to come forward?
Switched it up on you.
I was going to say you're not law.
Oh, okay.
We switched it up there. There you go.
Okay. Go ahead.
So in front of you, this resolution is for approval to submit for this year's wellness grant through Washington State. We were awarded this grant just a little bit back history. A couple years ago, used it for training and some evaluations as far as developing a wellness program. Since then, we are finalizing service contracts and policy for our wellness program. What we're trying to do here with this is, as with any new implementation of a program, there's a lot of initial training that needs to go on to bring the awareness to our officers as to why this is important, the services that are out there, what they offer, those types of things. And so we want to use this as kind of covering those one-time costs for training through those contract services, those providers, and making our wellness program as successful as we can. So the grant that we're submitting for is $50,000. It's non-matching, so it doesn't have a budgetary impact for us through the state.
So this is just a continuation of the last wellness grant. Is this from the CJT?
The same grant. It's a different year, so we'll resupply. It's not a continuation by any means.
Oh.
But we were awarded this a couple years ago. Use that money there. What's that? Was it last year? Okay, I'm sorry. I thought it was 2 years ago. And so.
So CJT got more funding.
Correct.
Yeah, it seems like they're going to keep getting funding. We've been seeing it consistently for the last few years.
Okay.
There's a handful of grants that you guys have seen us come up here for, and they're continue out there, the pursuit type grants, the wellness grants, the things that are important in the state right now and across the nation. And so we try to stay on top of those grants as they pertain to us and allow us to do some of these things that are maybe outside of budgetary constraints or help to offset some of those costs and, you know, really propel the programs.
Gentlemen, question.
So, yeah, I've got, so like on the resolution, the third whereas, it says whereas based on this assessment during the previous grant, the Benton County Sheriff's Office has established a wellness program and is working through two contracts with outside contractors to provide mental health critical incident memberships for wellness services and wellness training to improve deputy wellness. So what are critical incident memberships? What are these?
So, and we'll get into that a little bit more with our contract services and what that provides. We'll hopefully have those here within the month. But what we're looking at with our wellness policy is certain critical incidents will initiate, you know, when you talk about officer-involved shootings, mass traumas, deaths, you know, horrific kid accidents, stuff like that, that are really taxing on these guys where they're expected to leave that scene, go to the next call, show up back up at work, go to their families, is that it allows them to go talk to the counselors, have some of these services that are paid for by us, doesn't come out of their pocket to go do this, kind of viewed as part of the job or an occurrence because of their job. And so we feel that we need to do that so that we can keep these guys operating at a healthy standard. And we're not, you know, loading them down to where it boils over to where we see guys going out on LNI, where we see guys having to retire out early. And so for the county, it's actually a benefit because we get the longevity, and that's what we're looking for, is good, healthy officers that are able to come to work every day, that are able to stay in the career field a lot longer. And not constantly having that revolving problem.
So then, go ahead. No,
well, just on that critical, I know what critical incidents are, but I've never heard of memberships. You buy a certain amount of services?
No, so it's only for when a critical incident happens in our wellness policy, which we were going to come and present to you guys once we get some of the contracts finalized, is that certain critical incidences will qualify for them to go obtain services that the county will fund. But then they won't be a long-term thing. It will only be for a certain period of time. And then if they want to continue on with those services, they would do that themselves. Sorry.
So like, just, I guess my other question is like, what's not covered through health insurance and the EAP?
So EAP, what we run into is with EAP counselors, they are not qualified, or the vast majority of them do not have the same qualifications as the counselors that we seek out for these guys for first responders and their ability to deal with it. EAP historically is designed around just kind of the normal family type stuff. And so when you start talking about the trauma that comes from first responders, you have to have cultural competent counselors that deal with this stuff every day and how to work through it. And so we've actually struggled really hard to find somebody. We found somebody locally who does mostly just first responders, some of the treatments that are involved in that. And then with that nationwide, you have different things and how people respond in wellness programs as far as what benefits those people. And everybody responds differently. You have people who do better maybe, you know, from physical, you know, they just kind of work it off, they work through it. Other people really need to talk to somebody. Some people, you know, just need a little bit. Other people need something a little bit more in depth. And obviously it depends on what that circumstance was or what that incident is and how it impacts them and their life. And, you know, somebody who has kids at home at the same age and shows up to a death scene of that child, it will weigh on them different than it will somebody who doesn't have children or a new officer versus an old officer or any number of things like that.
So one last question, if that's all right. So like, if we get the grant of the $54,000, like what will happen if it, what's up?
Yeah, I think it's 50.
It is 50, correct.
Oh,
54 was the 50. Previous one.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Okay. Sorry. So if you get that and like, will it last a year or 2 years? And if we don't get it, how do we keep the program going without that, without it, you know, going away in a year or two or whatever?
So this $50,000 is mostly for the initial training. Mm-hmm. We have secured funding through our foundation to offset counselor costs as we initially get this going, because we don't have it in our budget right now. And we need to be able to have an understanding of what this is going to cost and what we're going to take on. We have an idea of where it's going to be, but our foundation has obligated money to us to help offset that. And so it shouldn't cost the county any money as we move forward through that until we have a better understanding of what this program looks like and what the cost is going to be. And then we're able to look at those things as far as, okay, what does this program really take to run for a constant ongoing biennium?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So, question. So I wasn't here when you guys originally went and applied for the grant. I think it was applied in 2022 for the $54,450. You received the grant funds in 2023, and you had a service provider that was there to grow and create a wellness program. That's what I read so far. And I apologize. I'm going to ask a couple of questions, because typically when we get these agenda action requests or we get a resolution, I'm used to coming from the city side of it, you know, reading 300 to 500 pages before we have a meeting, and it's pretty detailed. And this one is, and it's nothing to do with the sheriff's office, but I have to have the detail in order to make an educated decision on the benefit of the taxpayers. And this one is lacking some, so I'm going to ask some questions to educate myself up, since this was approved prior to myself being on the board.
So, Commissioner, just to let you know, so we haven't actually put in for it, so this is us coming, and we haven't even wrote the application yet, and so we just wanted to make sure we even had the authority to
So that's why we didn't get the full, complete grant then.
Exactly, because it's a lot of sense. Work to apply for them, and so instead of writing, you know, 3-4 pages for
So I got it. So we're going to go ahead and I'm going to get some of those answers now.
Okay.
So on the resolution, it states it's going to be, you're looking at two contracts. Outside contracts to provide services. Who are the two contractors?
One is Clarity Point, and we've been working back and forth with the PA's office and risk management to make sure that these contracts are sealed pretty tight. And then we're working with Sculpt Wellness for some of the other types of memberships. And we may even transition a little bit instead of doing services, because when we wrote this, we've talked about it and we're like, do we want to do just one-time trainings with some of those same folks?
Yeah.
Because we're also looking at a place out of Bellevue, I think it is, that is a public safety. That's all they do is public safety counseling. And they're doing it all, you know, a lot of contractors on the west side to come and provide training for our officers, because those would be the more one-time costs, too, that can be covered.
So what are the services that they provide? I mean, if they're giving a contract, what kind of services are actually looking at providing to officers or deputies?
So you have,
because it has a list on the it should be on the contract.
Mental health counseling.
Okay.
So that's her service. Sculpt has a lot more of, because when you look at wellness programs across the nation and what is substantial, there's all sorts of different pillars to include the physical aspect, you know, how your sleep, your eating habits, all these
different nutrition,
things. Those different things. And so they're able to come in, they're able to speak to some of those. They have some services that are directed specifically to PTSD treatment
okay. That
they provide. And so we kind of whittled through there, and it's like this service, that service, and that service would apply if we have somebody in a critical incident, because like I said, there are people that receive things differently when it comes to this and treating trauma, and their service for their physical treatment of PTSD there may work better than speaking to this counselor.
No, I appreciate it. I had a couple questions, because I always like to make sure we cross our T's and dot our I's. As far as I know that we have, I honestly believe going from coming from the public sector to the or the private sector coming to the public sector, Benton County has some of the best health insurance in the state. And we also has that employee assistance program as well. Are we duplicating like mental health? I mean, you know, you can go to your doctor, you know, they can subscribe you, you know, they can prescribe you to go to another doctor for mental health, you know, massages, to you name it. Would this be a duplicate? And if it's a duplicate of services, do we have any issues as far as insurance, any legal issues or anything there for duplicating services? We're paying for it twice. That's my concern. I don't know if that's an issue or not, but I wanted to ask the question.
We haven't seen those contracts or the wellness policy yet, so I can't say for sure whether or not they're duplicating services, but certainly we would want to, as you said, dot our T's and cross our I's and make sure that we aren't duplicating services that are either covered by insurance or through EAP, and now there can be specialized services that those don't cover.
Okay.
What we would want to do is make sure we're not doing that, because if we, the county cannot pay for the same thing twice, so we would be covered by an insurance program that we already pay for, we can't pay for that separately. So we would really want to make sure that their wellness services were not covered by the other insurances that the county already provides.
Okay.
So I would think that we want to have someone from HR who's much more versed on the insurance help take a look at that and make sure that we are not.
That's because I don't want us to go down the road, or you guys go down the road, and all of a sudden we have to halt something, or it affects
the county. We've had multiple discussions with Matt about exactly that. And that okay. was the issue, is when we talked to EAP, there are services they just don't provide, they can't provide, they don't have the ability to do those things. Yeah. And so we did have that discussion, because that's one of the biggest things that we're needing.
Yeah, and I understand even with EAP, but we're looking at the health insurance side of it too, which covers a lot of those facets and stuff already. Yeah, or mental health, PS, yeah, all those kind of things like that. Okay.
So one of the big pushes that we've found is that getting guys to go, and so in crossing the hurdle, because there still is the co-pays that come up and things like that, and so if we offer the services, it's more likely that they will feel inclined to go, because sometimes it's hard to get people to do what they probably do need to go do and take care of themselves. And that's what kind of the foundation of our wellness program is supposed to be.
And so I was even thinking another one, nutritionist, you can go to a doctor and they can get you a prescription for to go, or a referral to a nutritionist as well. The reason I'm asking those questions, once again, I don't want something that we're getting sideways on with insurance or anything else on the county side of it, because that's our responsibility there. But also I'm looking at it as, My other question would be, because it's important to me, I understand you got the grant. I'm cool with that. I think you guys know I'm all the counties, I look at Franklin County. Franklin County has having major financial issues. No big secret. Yakima County pulled money out of the reserves to go ahead and put in their general fund to supplement and help pay for critical services through the county. King County, I got an article here about a week ago that King County, which is financial, they have all kinds of money. I mean, they have high density residential, high density commercial, and it was in the paper that they're pretty much upside down. They were asking the state legislature for help, state legislation for help. So to me, we're trying to steer this ship around. I know in about 3.5 to 4 years, we could be in that same position. So I'm trying to have us, and the commissioners here are trying to have us in a more of a proactive position now versus a little bit of pain now versus a whole lot of pain later. And so my question is, you get the grant, you start doing this. You said it's just, you already had a consultant do the wellness program, so you got that part done. Now you're looking through another grant for implementing some of these contracts for these services. And then a year from now, that's my big thing, is a year from now, I think you said we don't know how much it's going to cost. You have XYZ amount in the Sheriff's Foundation. That how are you going to fund it? I guess, how are you going to continually fund it? Because I'm looking at it as the county is trying to, you know, get us on a corrected course. I'm really looking at every penny, dollar, and cent. I mean, it is what it is.
And so are we, and that's one of the big things is nationwide, you look at these, and without wellness programs, the turnover rate of officers and guys who go out on PTSD, this is becoming more and more common. And you're paying salaries and wages for guys who aren't here and having to cover the backside of it with overtime. And so the cost up front, the maintenance, is better than just dealing with it on the back.
I understand that, but how do you pay for it?
One of those things that we're also looking
at. So how do you pay for it in a year or 2 years? That's what I want to know.
No, and that's one of those things that we have to look at as to what that cost actually is, if it's able to be absorbed and create a line item and just be absorbed through the surplus in our budget a little bit there, or if this is something that we have to come back and talk to you guys with. We don't know exactly what the cost is. We have an estimate.
What's the estimate?
My estimate is we're probably somewhere between $25,000 and
$50,000
a year.
Okay.
So I guess I agree with like the grant. The only thing like I just Googled Sculpt to see what it does. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm just kind of confused. Like it says, you know, weight loss program, cryo chamber, cryo T-shock, cryo facials, red light therapy, infrared sauna, sauna pod, IV injections, virus recovery, nurse practitioner. To me, Sculpt, it, you can get it from other through insurance and other like this other program too. So I guess I'm fine with it. It's just the Sculpt side of it is more of like a leisure, like sales pitch type thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and most of what you read on there is actually not the services that we're using. Okay. They have other stuff that is specific to it. They have some stuff that is very specific to trauma and stress relief and those things, okay, which is what these guys are dealing with.
Okay. Yeah, it wouldn't look good in the press.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, you know, you're like, hey, we're going to go to a tanning salon or whatever.
That contract we're getting in particular, spa we're treatments. Probably going to have them sit alongside of us so we that they the could explain thing, it yes. to you because okay. they do have a new nurse practitioner on site that mm-hmm. came to us and we kind of talked through it and we're like, well, we don't want the optics sense. Of that, yeah. you know, yeah,
yeah.
either.
Yeah.
So my, okay. I may make one more comment.
So just real quick, like I said, this came in before I came into office here, so I appreciate it. I'm very proactive as well as any type of programs that will help officers or deputies, those type of things, to be able to go ahead and, you know, have a quality of life and go home to their families. So I'm cool with that. I just want to make sure that as we're going forward on this, this gets approved, that you work with HR to make sure we're not duplicating services, so we're not having any issues there, so you guys can go ahead and provide those services. We're not getting kicked back at the county side with insurance or anything. I think those are the biggest things forward. And then I know you guys are very bright, educated people. You've got a CFO here. Just figure out how you're going to finance that in the future, because like I said, we're looking at every dollar right now. So we're not in the same position as a lot of counties right now. We want to make sure that we can still provide the services. Thank you.
So I just have a clarification question. Yeah. So if we approve this, then it's basically you guys get the grant, but then you come back to us and say, this is where it's going. Is that correct? So like,
yeah. So we haven't even applied for it. So
yeah.
we may
yeah.
not even get
so we tell you, you know, hey, apply for it. And then you come back to us. And we're like, no, we don't need to do a Gold's Gym membership or something like that or whatever. We
right, yeah, you guys
right?
get to
okay.
decide at the end
gotcha.
Of the day
okay.
how we'll spend it. And if
that makes
you
sense.
Want, we can email you the application yeah. before we submit it, so if you guys feel comfortable with that.
Yeah, okay. because cool. on the application itself that you guys be provided, the questions I'm asking are pretty much the same questions that are on the contract yes. that were blank right now. And that's why I was asking those questions, because I just want to make sure we're not having any duplication or anything else. So that would be great.
Thanks yeah, for the clarification. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks.
So let me... When I was in law enforcement, I mean, things have really a lot different than when I was in law enforcement. And a short story is I was going through my 7-year burnout. I don't know if that's still that time period there. But so I went to a doctor and I walked in the waiting room and here's another police officer that I work with. He's left one and I'm left two. Left one, he took a retirement. Medical retirement, I was told to buck it up and get back out there and work or change careers. So things have changed a lot. They didn't have mental health. I had a friend I could talk to about my mental health because 1 week I had what was it, 8 overdoses in a 5-day work thing, you know? So they started talking to me at night. So, yeah, so, I mean, things have changed a lot. So I get this, and they say it's just all about, you know, the optics we don't want in the, you know, the front, the headline saying that, you know, Benton County deputies get spa treatments, something like that, right? You know, you want to avoid that. But you guys have a motion?
I do.
Okay, go ahead.
So I make a motion for the Board of County Commissioners, Benton County, Washington, to hereby concurs with a recommendation and hereby authorizes the Benton County Sheriff's Office to submit an application for funding under the WSC JTC Officer Wellness Program in the amount of $50,000, including the WSST.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes. Thank you. Thank you. Next recap, April 1st, 2024 public safety meeting. Mr. Eisinger.
Good morning.
Morning.
I asked to put this matter on today to give you a quick report of our April 1 public safety strategic planning session. We had about 40 people in attendance, really community leaders that cover every part, more or less every part of our local criminal justice system, including at the city and the county and the state level. It was moderated by Paul Casey, who's the executive director of Leadership Tri-Cities. And we conducted a SWOT analysis, which stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And essentially, the discussion involved just assuming that we are dealing with the barriers and the difficulties that are out there. I think it's kind of human nature to complain about a lot of those things, but ultimately realizing that that doesn't help anything. We essentially entered into the conversation realizing these things are in place. These are the realities that we're dealing with. And how do we look at the strengths, the weaknesses, the opportunities, and the threats that impact public safety in our local justice system? We had great participation. There were it was held in this room. I believe there were 9 tables for breakout sessions, 4 or 5 people per table, with kind of people mixed up with law enforcement, city council members, county officials, to engage at a table conversation and then give answers in the broader conversation. And the idea was really just to bring elected officials and these independent agencies together, so that we could have a discussion about common concerns and interests. I think that everybody is so busy just dealing with all of their own issues. Everybody has a lot on their plate. So it was good to get everybody in the same room to have that conversation. And at the very beginning, we had what's called a blue sky conversation. And Paul asked the entire group, you know, what would you ideally want this community to look like from a public safety and law and justice standpoint in 3 years from now? And sometimes those questions may feel like, you know, fluff questions at the beginning of a, you know, a meeting like this, but that's really the why that's the reason that we're doing all of these things and tackling all of these things, right? It's because we have a vision of a safe community where our kids can go to the park, they can play soccer, they can run down the street and play with their neighbor kids. There was a lot of great comments. I won't get into those, but essentially just that vision of where are we going, is the why for the rest of the conversation.
You know, Eric, can I bring one part up? I know you said there was a bunch of people here.
Yes.
And so I just want to clarify that for the public and stuff like that, because it was police chiefs, it was the sheriff, it was prosecutors, it was the manager of Office of Public Defense. We had state representatives in here. We had mayors in here. We had city managers in here. We had city attorneys in here. You name it. I think we had state police in here. We had judges in here. You name it, it was a huge list of individuals all participating in what you're looking at is making a more robust public safety system in the county.
Yes.
And I just wanted to mention those people because you had quite a list.
Thank you, Commissioner. You know, and it really takes getting the whole group of individuals together to really start coming up with some common solutions. So the next part that we talked about was strengths, and we had a conversation about, well, what is our community doing well from a public safety and law and justice standpoint? So a few comments that I pulled off. And actually, during this meeting, we had these poster board pages. This is one of them, and I'll talk about in just a minute. And they were up along the wall, and then individual attendees had stickers that at the end of the session, when we identified the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats, we
everyone placed these stickers and what they believed the most pressing concerns or needs were. So the very first part of the conversation was strengths. And I think there was a lot of recognition that we are a community where there is a lot of engagement and community involvement. There's responsiveness, both from public officials and law enforcement, police collaboration. We have a lot of public support for public safety. That was made clear by the public safety sales tax passage. One of the most encouraging comments that I think I heard was that the issues, our public safety issues, are solvable in size. You know, I've talked before about communities have direction and momentum, and I think we're at a point where we can still solve our public safety problems. And then the last one was that we're motivated to make a change. So after we discussed that, we had a discussion on weaknesses, which is this is the first, this is one of our flip chart pages that was along the wall. And there were basically the flip charts contained all of the responses from all of the tables in the room, but the items that are circled are the items that had three or more sticky notes or stickers to indicate that there was kind of a broader basis of support for it. So the first weakness that was called out was processing juvenile cases and learning to adapt and juvenile accountability. And this is something that we have really struggled with. The laws are difficult when it comes to prosecuting juveniles. As an example, a juvenile is convicted of murder in the first degree, faces a maximum sentence of 180 weeks or about 3.5 years of incarceration or up to age 21. As a result, we have taken an aggressive posture on seeking to decline those cases to prosecute them as adults. So there are needs within my office and just across the community and agencies to make changes when it comes to handling juvenile cases. The next one that you'll see is improve recovery center diversion and jail alternatives. This is something that has been a weakness that we are addressing in a major way by putting up our recovery center. We're doing diversion programs. We're working on jail alternatives. Robert, if you could flip to the next slide, please. That ages me. They're not exactly slides, photos. Thank you. The next one on the top, kind of the same thing, mental health, homelessness support programs, lots of indication from the room that those are weaknesses that we have, again, that we are working on both with our therapeutic courts, the recovery center, and diversion programs. And then at the bottom of this page for weaknesses, lack of attorneys, bailiffs, court staff, et cetera, had a significant number of votes. On opportunities, so looking at where in our community do we have an opportunity to improve some of these things, a few of the major comments that were made was form a regional crime team, working towards regional standalone 911 services, community education about the justice system. Actually, it was very interesting. There were some comments made that made it apparent that we could be doing better as a public safety community to communicate out to the public. And I have a follow-up meeting with a representative of the State Patrol who had a number of great comments about 211 and 988 call-in lines. Expand and refine diversion programs. That's also underway. Develop mentorship and training programs locally. That received a number of votes. And then behavioral health and recovery funding. So lastly, if you could flip to the next one, Robert, we had a conversation about threats. And the threats are really just speaking to what are the external threats that could throw our public safety into chaos and sink the whole system. I mean, I'm not trying to be too macabre here, but that's the reality of it. And the first one is taking advantage of grant resources. So Representative Stephanie Bernard was here. She talked about the need to potentially pursue more grant funding, that there's unclaimed grant money, and there's possibly even grants to get grant writers, which could be tackled either maybe at the county level or the Council of Government level, the BFCOG. The next one is OPD crisis, and that person put two exclamation marks after that, and there's a whole lot of stickers there. The last is inability to adapt and change as necessary or rigidity in policy. And so at the very end of the meeting, we had a conversation about what are some of the takeaways, what's the rallying cry. So let me cover those really quickly. The first was there's a need for awareness of resources and needs and opportunities. I think there's a need to be honest about what's not working. We all have a tendency to continue to do the same things in the same ways. And given the challenges that we're facing, we need to be curious about what might work better than we've been doing. Strategic adaptation to meet community needs. One of the judges mentioned looking beyond the police for opportunities, prioritizing mental health services, doing the most with what we have, anticipating future needs. At the very end, Councilman Torelli from Kennewick said education, efficiency, and staffing. In other words, getting smart on the issues, working to be as efficient as possible, and staffing the different departments as needed. So as just a takeaway for the board, the high points that were really noted on weaknesses and threats, it was noted that that the group really felt the highest needs were addressing homelessness, drug use, and mental health issues, which, as I said, is already in process through the Recovery Center, our therapeutic courts. I've also worked very hard with Merit Resources and Greater Columbia Behavioral Health on a Recovery Navigator program. They go into the jail and meet with people who are booked in on drug charges. So that was noted as maybe one of the biggest concerns, but it's also something that we are in the process of handling really well, in my opinion. So other than that, the biggest concern that was noted is a system-based concern, and it's this middle one here. It's the OPD crisis. And just to put that into perspective, I know the board is aware of what's going on there, but I asked my staff for numbers of sheriff's office and state patrol cases that are currently filed in the district court where OPD is appointed and no attorney is assigned. And as of today, April 9, it's 223 cases filed with the court, OPD appointed, no attorney. So this is the situation we find ourselves in before the case cap reduction takes place.
And that's 2025, right?
It's
going to go all the way to 2027.
So all this those numbers is going to quadruple, basically, because it's worse.
Those problems are, my wife grew up in Miami, and I hear stories from my in-laws about, you know, boarding up the windows and, you know, filling up the bathtub with water when a hurricane was coming. And essentially, we are looking at the, you know, the radar, the weather map. We've got this massive hurricane off the coast, and it's going to make landfall at some point. So realizing that the OPD crisis in that, this got the most votes of any threat to public safety, so 13 votes. Realizing that it is currently the biggest threat to public safety, there's a hurricane that's off the coast that's heading our direction. So realizing that, now is the time to kind of focus that as a priority. As I've said before, you know, we would all love to solve all of the problems all at the same time, but that's just not how it happens when it comes to being strategic. So I'm hopeful that this helps the board just focus its attention on what is the most pressing, what are the most pressing issues, what are the most strategic issues to tackle from a public safety standpoint. Any questions from the board?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, you know, I know that you talked about the mental health, substance abuse, recovery center. We have veterans court, mental health court, drug court. I think that's working fine. So that one, we're definitely, as you said, we're in progress. We're working toward that one, and we're kind of a beacon. I know the whole state is looking at us and how we're completing that. As far as OPD, I know we have talked a whole lot about that as we come into office. I know we've talked with staff quite a bit. I had a meeting with our OPD manager. I think he came in my office last week. We had a discussion for about an hour and stuff. We've made a lot of pivoting. We've done a lot of flex type things as far as contracts with private attorneys. We're looking at doing a potential internship and maybe a partnership with Franklin County where we can get neighbor law schools with students in neighboring states like Idaho, Wyoming, and Montana to do a half a summer here and a half a summer in Franklin County. And maybe if they graduate, they might want to be closer to any family there. They might want to work here in Benton County or Franklin County. We're looking at potential, and I think Nikki Torres was looking at that in Olympia, maybe some type of student forgiveness if they work X, Y, Z amount of years. for our county. So I know those are all important things, but the case cap, I don't know if the public understands. For felony cases, I think right now it's 150. They're proposing by 2027 to drop that down where an attorney can do 150 cases per year. Now it's going to go down to 47, 400 cases in district court. That looks like that's going down to 120. So that's putting everything in a kibosh. Yes. And like I said, I talked to our OPD manager. We're trying to figure this out. I know staff is looking at some of the scenarios you mentioned with all the cases that are due. I know we're probably going to look at making some meetings or creating some meetings with the cities and their city attorneys, city managers, as we have contracts with them to go ahead and prosecute or defend cases. So it's going to be it's a lot of work. So we're going to have to roll up our sleeves, all of us all together, to go ahead and make that happen, which is going to be a huge challenge. The state's going to have to kick in eventually, and state legislators are going to have to work to help us out on that. That's for sure.
You know, we've been doing everything we can for the last 2-3 years or even longer to try to make this system work, and we're at a point now that it could collapse, and the only alternative is the courts are going to have to release people. Maybe I hate to see that happen, but maybe that's when the legislature finally steps up and do what they should be doing, along with our Supreme Court, state Supreme Court. Maybe they'll wake up and realize what's going on and change some of their rules and such. And I mean, now you got attorneys shooting attorneys. So, I mean, how is that going to help law schools, right? You know, was that Vegas where they... attorney shot another attorney? That doesn't go well for that profession. So, it's we're at a crisis, but no one realizes we're at a crisis.
Exactly.
We see the hurricane off the coast, right, Commissioner, to use my analogy. And my office is going to have to be very curious and inventive about how we're going to tackle it, because we are the ones that, bring all the cases into the system.
Right.
So I don't want to be in a position where members in our community are, you know, upset about serious crimes not being prosecuted, but at the same time, we've got to find a way to meet our goal of maintaining public safety and having personal responsibility and accountability, but also making the system work. And so it's going to be a challenging time. A lot of that is going to fall to how we run our office, but I just wanted the board as well to be aware of the challenge that we're facing.
And then on a final note, I just want to make sure once again the public is educated on this. That was one of the things, educating the public. Jared or Matt, I know that we have spent, Benton County has definitely spent, I think about almost $6 million in for public defense, where the state has kicked in about $5.4 million. That's $5.4 million is not to Benton County, that's for 39 counties, correct?
Yeah, our OPD budget is about just under $12 million a biennium, $6 million a year, and the state for all 39 counties spends less than $6 million for the entire state.
So we're doing our part. We're working.
We're spending more than the state is.
Yeah, we're spending more than the state is.
Yeah. So, yeah. Any other questions, gentlemen?
When's the budget on the tax? Is it this year or is it next year? Do you know? When we redo the budget and stuff for this? It's this year. Because that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's just going to be, and I agree with what you're saying, it's just going to be some hard decisions where we're going to have to transfer money over here versus some of the, you know, local groups that we gave money to help out some of the community. So it's going to be a tough decision. But again, like you're saying, I hope the community sees it. I don't want those criminals going back out on the streets. So we got to figure out to keep them in the jail, or, okay, if they're not guilty, they're not guilty, but they need to go through the courts.
Right.
And so there's some 911s. And like you're saying, the hurricane is going to be worse than the movie Twister down the road, you know. I mean, really, it is. I mean, it's...
But the public needs to realize, too, that, you know, we may be at a point where the courts just start saying, well, you know, you violated the, 90-day rule or whatever.
Time for trial rule,
and they just start releasing, and then, you know, we can't find attorneys or can't pay for it. It might become one point where we've done all we can do, but the public needs to realize that. Then it's out of our hands at that point. you know, like the guy complaining about the you know, I get the property taxes went up, but that's all controlled by the state legislature. Yeah. They set who's eligible for deferment. They set, you know, I know our legislators, we can talk to them all we want, and they're on board with what we want, but it's that freaking west side of the state that's in la-la land most of the time that just thinks, oh, it's all good and happy, you know.
Well, that's
and,
like, you know, I agree with what you're saying, too, because it's
for it's me, frustrating.
Yeah, it's frustrating for me. Like, I'm on a board, and there's one county, King County, they want to have more votes on the board, and it's like, you guys already control our state. So it's frustrating because I can guarantee you all the constituents, like at least 80% of the community here would agree that our community will be horribly twister movie if we don't get this stuff figured out. Whereas the state, like you're saying, the west side, King County or Pierce County, they're the ones that are kind of controlling this right now. When we have our legislators that are completely in agreement with us and fighting over there, but they're still out of the vote because we don't have the majority. So I'm hoping that Benton County sees this, Franklin County sees this. I'm hoping that all the counties see this and we can fight and vote for the correct person to go in there to change Washington State. Like that gentleman said, the gas tax, friggin' stupid. All these other taxes are so frustrating because two counties are controlling our state and making Washington State one of the worst states to build in right now. As a builder, it's the toughest, most expensive state to build in the country. So we're really number one right now, and I don't want to be number one in anything in the country like this.
You know, I guess one last thing too, Eric, I know we're going to do a state of the counties. Franklin County and Benton County is going to do a state of the counties. It's been a few years since we've done one of those at the Tri-City Regional Chamber of Commerce. And I know when we talk about OPD, and you know, everybody wants to talk, how does that affect? It affects the economy here as well. Because if you have people, give an example, let's say you have to pick and choose, or the you know, what cases you're going to prosecute or not, or what our law enforcement decides they're going to do on that. And you have people walking out of Macy's or a grocery store with bags of groceries or bags, hundreds of dollars worth of clothes through one of these outlets. And what are those businesses going to do? They could potentially just close up shop and leave the state or leave the county, which also costs jobs and revenue and tax revenue. So it's a big challenge. I'm hoping that Olympia gets the message and figures out how to help the counties and the cities within the county to work on this, because you're right, it's a task.
Absolutely. And I might just close this out with a hopeful comment, which is we had 40 plus, you know, community leaders representing, as I said, every part of our local criminal justice system, committed to working through all these issues for an entire morning. And obviously we all share those complaints. It's really frustrating, but our community needs us to find a way. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a commitment in that room that we are going to find a way. It's just going to take doing some things differently and being inventive. That's certainly something that my office needs to do. So I, for the folks out there, we're going to find a way, and I appreciate your time this morning. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
It's called pivoting.
Yes, sir.
Okay, next, Glenn, on the public sales tax request for proposals for gang prevention initiative, part of the public safety tax.
Yep. Yes, good morning, commissioners. Thank you for your time. So it is that time, again, to seek applications for the gang and crime prevention initiative funded by the PSST. This is a process that we go through every 2 years, meaning that this proposal will be for the 25-26 biennium. Now, we're looking at using $1.8 million during the application process. This amount is based on the numbers presented as part of the ballot measure process. So that, of course, breaks out to $900,000 per year for gang and crime prevention programs. It also represents a $600,000 decrease from the previous biennium allotment for these programs. And with your approval, our RFP will go live.
Any questions, gentlemen? Nope. Comments or anything?
I guess, is it one thing too that do we team up at all with Franklin County on this at all, or is it just Benton County?
It's just Benton County, my knowledge.
Okay.
Just Benton.
Okay.
Are you guys ready? I'll make a motion.
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
So I'll make a motion to approve the request for proposals for the 2025-2026 projects and programs supporting the Benton County Gang and Crime Prevention Initiative.
Second.
Have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes.
Thank you,
Glenn. Next, Paul Where'd Paul go?
I think he stepped out for 2 seconds.
Paul just stepped out. He'll be right back. He was anticipating earlier.
So. Okay. Back, so. Okay. We'll give him a. I ran to the restroom. You want to bring his slides up there, Robert, if you could? Did you find him, Adam?
I think he's visiting the.
Okay.
There he is right now.
Okay.
Just leisurely walking about the foyer now. Right up. Looking up at the.
Looking at the artwork.
We'll give him a round of applause.
Hanging. Hey,
hey, and everybody's calling. Hey.
I know. Timing.
Hey, you got a round of applause. That's a good thing in a commissioner's meeting.
No.
Or you just say, yeah, you just say next slide.
Just yeah. Give, yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Thank you very much for letting me speak today.
Make sure you use the mic too so the people online can hear you.
Okay. This work?
And yes. Is it green? Is it lit up?
It's lit up.
Perfect. Yeah,
okay,
perfect.
Great.
All right, we'll try and speak loud anyway. We're here because FSEC is releasing its draft certification agreement and the draft recommendation to the governor. These documents were released April 1st. They're taking public comment, literally at public request. They mentioned it in the adjudication along the way, but then they sort of hemmed it and hawed a little bit. Then letters from the county, state, Tri-City Cares, others achieved getting us a public comment period. But the public comments close Wednesday at 5 p.m. That's 2 days from now. So everything you're about to see from here on hinges on what they are looking at, what's their proposed decision. And my mission here is to try and convey some information, especially about visual impacts with the consequent economic impacts that they cause. Is their the proposed decision good enough, or does it need more work? Their documents rely on the two maps for option one and option two in the final environmental impact statement. And really understand this, what they ended up with was these red and green dots corresponding to wind turbines, proposed locations for each of those maps. And the red ones are what's called class three. You have to really read the fine print to understand this. Let's go to the next slide. All right, there's the fine print. There's four classes. Zero impact is green. And then there's one significant impact, two significant impacts, or three or more. And the three or more, we're talking wildlife corridor for Oudinot-Nassauk. Cultural would be a second impact. Visual would be a third impact. And aerial firefighting would be a fourth. Fugitive dust could be a fifth. Then there's more. But that's how they made their basic cut. And the real question is did they do that job well enough? Next slide, please. So what do? We went to Google. Actually, we asked help from our visual experts. We had Dean Apostle working on the adjudication. His mentor is James Palmer, PhD, lives in Vermont. One of the top people, these are two of the top people in the country. Dr. Palmer created a Google Earth model, an interactive geographic model. And I'm going to show you what this model can be used for, specifically to show you what the project will look like under these various impact scenarios all across the site in just 5 minutes. So next slide, please. This is what the front page of the model looks like when you open it. You get a list of the possible key observation points, and then you can turn the impacts on and off. And that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to walk through just a few of these. I'm just sampling these. And this map now turns out to be far better than the one that the applicant put together. And when you can blow this up, you can fly in and out, and you can actually get right on the ground and simulate. That's what we're going to show you now, what it looks like on the ground. Next slide, please. Now, where I'm going with this, we're trying to identify whether or not they did a good enough job removing turbines. And our basic analysis here is indicating that there's two major areas of concern where I don't believe they've done a proper analysis. that haven't identified the impacts properly. What it means is that there's about 40, 45 more turbines that we believe should be removed. And I'm going to show you why. Next slide, please. Okay, this first one is from Benton City. There's the direction, and that's the arc you're looking at. Next slide, please. This is on the ground sitting right in downtown Benton City. That's looking straight across at the Horsehaven Hills. You can see the four turbines right towering over the city. Now, they're very light because the turbines are, in the imagery, they're white against the blue sky. And then the turbine width and the blade width doesn't really respond to the commands to make it bigger. In reality, they will be darker and more prominent to visually. But there they are. Next slide, please. Now, the first slide just now was with no mitigation, and this is now the council mitigation. And you can see that those four turbines are gone. And this proposed mitigation, approved by the council, recognizes wildlife, cultural, visual, and aerial firefighting impacts. That's what you're looking for. Next slide, please. Here's the same analysis for the Red Mountain wineries. Next slide, we're going to be sitting at Fidelitas. There's the deck from the deck of Fidelitas. Next slide, please. That's the view. It's a little farther away than downtown Benton City, but the same thing. Now you have nine turbines visible in that arc you're looking at with the model, and it's heading straight south. And this is with no mitigation, applicant proposal. Next slide, please. And now here's the council's mitigation proposal. There's only three turbines that remain, and they're way down in the south in the east part of the view here, and they're small and far away. They cleaned the skyline. So this is, again, this is good. Next slide, please. Now we're going to look at Badger Mountain South residences. How many permits, how many houses are going in there? Thousands? Okay, that's the view we're looking at. Next slide, please. You can see 35 plus turbines just in this one view from, and then this is right in the middle of the development on the upper side. So this is hundreds of homes and apartments, proposed apartments.
Proposed by about 5,000 homes.
5,000 homes and apartments. That's what they're going to see in their in the applicant's proposal. Next slide, please. This is the council mitigation proposal. It drops it from 35 plus to 11 in this view.
So FSEC is recommending that so far.
Right now, that's the FSEC recommendation. Now, this is where I turned off those class three turbines, and what's left is the green, yellow, and orange. So the red ones are gone away in this view. Next slide, please. This is now going to be our proposal. We think that they need to remove the green and yellow and orange turbines that remained in the previous slide. And that's because we're seeking the same level of skyline protection and issue resources protection as they've done by Benton City and the wineries. Next slide, please. Now we'll just take a similar view at Summit View. I'm walking through the residential communities from west to east here. Next slide, please. This is just the aerial photo. You can see just how many homes in this aerial view. Next slide, please. That's Riata over there. This is the applicant's proposal, no mitigation. And you can see 16 turbines in this one view. This is just the southwest view. This view from these homes extends all the way to the east. So you'd need three other segments just like this one to really get the full view. And you're talking a total of 16 here, probably plus another 40. That's 60 to 70 turbines in their view. Next slide, please. This is the council mitigation. It goes from 16 to 3. And there's five turbines visible. That the class 3 has been removed. Next slide, please. This is now where we turn off the green, yellow, and orange plus the red. This is what we're trying to get them to go to. This is our proposal.
Paul, are you going to do this during public comments?
I am. Okay. We're going to do this, and I'm almost done. I will explain what those comments will look like. Next slide, please. Okay, Thompson Town. A lot of homes going in, and they all faced south. I want to point out that the view from here in the canyon view, Canyon Lakes homes, very similar. So we have more. We have visualizations like this, and we'll place them up on the internet for free looking. The model can be downloaded for free and used. You can enter your address and go anywhere and see the same thing from any location. And we're making that available for free. Next slide, please. This is the applicant proposal, and you can see 25 turbines in this one view from one of the homes. I'm sitting literally in the yard on the hill, looking south. Next slide, please. This is the council's mitigation. The class three, the red turbines are removed. Still 14 turbines visible. Now there's another 15 turbines to the east in this view. This too is failing to recognize the impacts on wildlife, cultural, visual, and aerial firefighting. Next slide, please. This removes those other classes again, and now we've got a clean skyline. This is what we're after. Next slide, please. Okay, so this is what we're seeing. If you basically then do this analysis and compile it, look at it all cumulatively, it points to these two areas where those green and yellow and orange turbines are critically need to be removed in order to protect the views and the other resources, cultural, wildlife, aerial firefighting, for the, you know, from those houses and for those properties nearby. And that's really what we're doing. Next slide, please. So our comment is, and this is now in a spreadsheet, I've literally laid out, I've done what FSEC didn't do, and their consultants in the AIS didn't do, and this is going to be our comments. Spreadsheet identifying the turbines that need to be removed and why. And what we're seeking to try and do is get into the record a rational basis, a rational scientifically based basis for making good decisions. If FSEC doesn't do this, it leaves us with no option but to wait till the governor to approve the draft the way it comes out and file suit 30 days later. Any questions?
No.
I appreciate what you're doing on that too, but it's frustrating too, like seeing that last slide before that, showing how much agricultural land is going to be affected with the turbines as well.
Oh, I did not really look at solar. There's the acres and acres of solar.
But yeah, look at that. And yeah, and the solar too, you didn't, because how many acres was it? It was like, what's the country's biggest solar project is what they're pushing for originally. Yeah. But it's shocking that it's going to affect all the agricultural. I know a lot of that's dry land, but it's still farm agricultural land. Yep. And again, I'm glad that we're pushing back to get these turbines. I personally had to get rid of the turbines completely. But again, if we kept it where they originally proposed, it would drop property tax. I mean, it would value homes. It's going to mess everything up.
The balancing act is between the property taxes you get from the project and the company on, and balancing that against the 20 to 30% value loss due to the visual impacts.
Correct.
And so I have not made those calculations, but somebody should. Mm-hmm. But that's, again, the impact calculations that spin off of even identifying, because ESSEC hasn't done this, which turbines are in which class.
Have you seen, I can't remember the guy's name, Benton PUD? Rick Dunn.
Yes.
Wrote that article. Have you read his email?
Rick Dunn was our expert witness. His testimony was struck in the adjudication.
Yeah. Was it really?
We filed all of his articles in as public comments. It was interesting. And
Because his article was spot on, like perfect, like showing this does not work.
The challenge is getting FSEC to realize that some common sense needs to reign here. And, you know, I mean, this project won't generate power, abundant power reliably when we need it. And it impacts a whole bunch of people. and other resources. And it makes no sense. It's this poorly sited project. And that's really what we're up against.
And that's what, it's funny how you say no common sense. And that's what our state right now has, no common sense on a lot of things that we've talked about. The lawyers, the public safety sales tax, we're trying to keep going for safety. And then this,
okay,
our state's going crazy.
So bottom line here is now, comments, you're going to hear from Greg and Michelle in a second about their recommendation to have you sign a letter. Comments have to go in by Wednesday night, and and then FSEC will basically, hopefully, make some revisions to their two documents, mm-hmm. and make and on April 17th, that's next Wednesday.
Yeah,
they'll come up with a vote on whether to send a recommendation on to the governor. And if the governor then takes 60 days to deliberate, he has three options: approve it, deny it, or send it back to FSEC for some reconsideration. We don't know what's going to happen yet. But if he basically approves the mitigations that they've identified with no change, we, the county, and the Yakima Nation will have 30 days to make a decision to file suit.
Good.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
All right.
Yeah, I was... You know, when I was in the legislature, there was a map, and I haven't been able to find the map of, you know, ranked windmill sites, wind turbine sites in the state. And my memory says there was never one in the Horsehaven Hills ranked. But I can't find that map. But within the first 5 years, I think every premium site was taken, and then it was down to two-tier, three-tier sites around the state that were viable for wind. But I just can't find a map. But my memory tells me that Horsehaven's was never one of those viable sites. I don't know, but I can't say
Rick
that.
Dunn's papers, there's one graphic which very clearly just shows just how little this particular wind level of energy production is going to affect power, the power markets and supply of energy in Washington State. And also, it's going to do absolutely nothing for climate change. So, and that's the basic supposed mission for this project. So, as I said, I think it's pretty much irrational. And we're doing our best to prevent this decision from harming people and just keep
thank you things. One last little comment too, I was doing a project in Walla Walla, so I drive to Walla Walla once or twice a day, and it's just, you see all those wind turbines down towards Walla Walla blowing crazy, and half of them aren't working at all. It's because of the maintenance, you know. These things, I mean, what's the life thing on these, like 15 years 20 years at the most,
25 to 30.
Yeah, but the maintenance and everything, they don't pay for themselves is my thing. It's not a good investment.
What is a pencil lot if you don't have government subsidies? That's the question.
Well, that's the only reason why these work is because they're getting the
tax.
Exactly.
Energy tax sales. Energy credits.
It's triggering me. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. Really appreciate that detailed work. Okay, Greg and Michelle.
Good morning.
Morning.
I also wanted to mention, since you guys were on the property tax value, the Washington State Association of Counties, which we are a part of, recently put out a white paper on renewable energy projects in relation to property tax and other tax incentives. So you may want to review that. It's a very good one.
So to get started, want to thank Tri-City Cares. They've done a great job representing the community and the community's input and ideas through this process. So Paul and Dave, those guys have done a great job. Yeah, it's been good to work with them through this. And they are correct that we have till tomorrow night to submit our comment letter. We did meet last week with Brian Brown, Michelle. Our outside legal counsel did meet to discuss the draft recommendation. We've been fortunate that Michelle's done a real deep dive on the application to put together her thoughts. We did meet with Ken and his group. Ken did take the lead in putting together a letter for us. And so what we'd like to do this morning is just kind of touch on that letter. We presented it to you via email, so you guys have it. And then have Michelle kind of walk through kind of the thought process and the ideas behind what's included in the letter today.
All right. So I'm just going to refresh your memory with Scout's original application request. So they originally requested a maximum of 231 turbines. They had two options. So option one was the 231 turbines that would only be 459 feet tall. Their option two was the taller ones, but it would only be 147 turbines. Those are the ones that are 671 feet tall. They also requested two solar array areas out of three options, and then the two battery storage systems. FSEC's recommendation was to approve their ask in part with conditions. So as Paul touched on, they are requiring the developer to remove all class three or all of the red turbines that Paul and Tri-City Cares put together on this map. However, FSEC's recommending 222 turbines not to exceed 671 feet. They're recommending three solar array areas of no more than 5,400 acres. And that acreage was reduced actually originally by Scout in their last revision to their application. So as Will mentioned, originally Scout was gonna apply for almost 11,000 acres of solar, and that would have been one of the largest solar sites in the US. However, during the EIS process, they reduced that in half to 5,400. They've recommended four substations to be installed, two battery storage systems, four permanent meteorological towers. Those would have heights of up to 411 feet, so they're excessively tall as well. And then, of course, they're requiring the aircraft detection lighting system, which was passed recently by House Bill 1173, which was sponsored by Representative Connors here locally. So in our letter to FSEC, our comments and points of concern are a lack of clarity on the number of turbines and solar arrays that may actually be built. So what FSEC did in their summary to the governor and in the certification agreement was to give maximums, but that doesn't actually show, you know, any sort of visual or actual numbers that will be built on the ground. And that's quite difficult to interpret because they said definitely remove the class three impact turbines, but they also have a host of mitigation measures in the final EIS that need to be removed as well or considered. So we don't actually know how many acres of solar will be built or how many turbines will actually be built. Both the maximum height and number of turbines and the solar array areas that FSEC is proposing exceed both options that the developer proposed originally. So we have concerns with that. Originally, they proposed two solar array areas, FSEC's giving them three, although the acreage is reduced. And then obviously they're allowing them to build more taller turbines than was originally proposed. So we have concerns with that. We also have concerns that the project footprint is going to be based on future fish and wildlife data, which we don't know what that is currently. So there's a little bit of concern on our part that that may go in favor of the developer. The county is not listed as a consultant for the traffic control plan. So out of all of the areas that were identified in the final EIS, there's 17 intersections that need improvement. Those 17 intersections are county roads, not state DOT roads. Only at this point during construction, DOT will be consulted on the traffic plan. And we feel like the county road department and public works needs to be consulted because their roads, our roads, will be impacted the most from the construction and development. And then lastly, the last major point that we're asking is that FSEC have an independent consultant review the scope, method, and cost estimate of the decommissioning plan. We have concerns about the decommissioning plan, if the price or the cost estimate to decommission the project will be enough. We understand that a lot of the current projects out there that are being decommissioned don't have enough money bonded against the project to be able to actually clean it up to sufficient standards. So that's kind of a high level overview of all of our points that we're going to be raising.
Comments, questions?
So also too, do we know if the city of Kennewick's submitting a letter too? Because I know that one of their big concerns was like the water issue and stuff and everything, supplying material and everything.
Sure. We haven't heard from the city of Kennewick. Okay. The only people that we've heard so far is from the Tri-City Cares folks.
Okay.
So we hope that they will. The good news is that before construction begins, multiple plans are required. So about 22 plans are required, and one of those is where they'll get the water. They need to identify both potable water and other water, where they'll get it, and also have the agreement in place that they have the right to use the water. So that'll be identified in process. It's just a bit difficult. A lot of the information, the decommissioning plan, the water, a lot of the concerns and topics that we had, those will be drafted and submitted to FSEC after the governor approves and then before they construct. So kind of in that limbo time before construction occurs, I don't know that there'll be a public participation process to comment on any of that or have that revised, which will be a little difficult.
I thought I read that they bought a water right. Did I read that or?
I'm not aware of that. My understanding is that they're trying to work with DNR on getting water.
DNR, that's right. They'll probably give them a well or two then. So just you know the right people, DNR will give you a well.
So I think, you know, the decommission was a big one. Outstanding letter. It's a lot of information, so I appreciate you guys doing that. I know Ken Harper, our attorney that represents us, had some stuff on the decommissioning. I tried to give you guys kudos on the the Monte Carlo portion of the program. I'm very pro that as a finance person. I think anybody that's in finance that does it well uses a Monte Carlo program. Well, I think that's important to bring up is I'm hoping FSEC uses some type of program like that because it will actually show how the cost, what the cost of decommissioning would be, and it's going to be astronomical. And sure. I think they need to look at that in order to go ahead and make sure that Scout Energy is responsible for the decommissioning when it comes to the next 20 years or so when those things start coming, because it's going to be a big cost to the state and to the county. So I appreciate the letter, and I'm ready to make a motion if you guys are.
Yes.
All right. I move that the board approves the submission of the April 9th comment letter to FSEC for the Horse Heaven Hill Wind Farm.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed nay. The ayes have it. The motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, too. Any other business, gentlemen?
No? Just a couple things real quick. I got it.
Let me put this back on. Greg, we will be seeing you here at 3:30. Today we have a special workshop.
Good point.
With the canine shelter and all that. I think that'll be a very productive meeting. And, you know, I was with a bunch of our civil attorneys. I know you said I was the guy that was able to go and meet with a meeting with staff. This has been historically, as I got to meet with our civil attorneys, they brought in files. And this goes back 25 to 30 years, and it's never been permanently fixed. It's been up and down, up and down. I think today at 3:30, we're going to have a solution to finally fix this issue and make it right. Let's see here. I got an email from a gentleman. He was asking about the public safety sales tax. I'm going to just email him back and letting him know if he listens to his audio. Yes.
Yeah, I sent an email back.
Yeah, he was not wanting to know if there'll be a group that would, you know, be able to view how the public safety sales tax is spent, those type of things. The majority of those funds, nothing's changed. Right before we approved or we sent that on the ballot, all the cities and the counties had those funds already allocated. It was listed on our county website where the funding is going on that. So I think that's there. We do have a law justice council. That's the sheriff's staff. It has city managers, mayors, city council members, police chiefs, commanders of the police chiefs. It's a very broad range of people. We have citizens there as well that are on that board. And so we do talk about how the allocation of that funding is being spent. I think all of the allocation, nothing's changed. It didn't give us any more money. It just put everything in place the way it is. But that's why I want to make sure that we get all, I'm crossing my T's, dotting my I's, and Matt, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe all the cities, including the county, had approximately 6 months in reserves. So that the public safety sales tax did not pass, we had enough in there to go ahead and pivot to figure out how we were going to be able to fund programs and deputies and all those type of things until we figured out how we could fix it within those 6 months. That being said, it was passed. Now we're going to Benton County Emergency Services, where I'm a board member as well. That was a significant lift for our emergency services communications portion. It's a lot of money. I said this, I think the city's had 6 months as well in reserves. We're using a lot of that funding, if not most of it or all of it, to update the microwave towers and all the other things that need to be done so that we have a good communication, emergency communication system here within Benton and Franklin County. And it is a very expensive venture. But if we don't do it, and I think some of the parts, I think Jay even said some of the parts that they're using, they bought off eBay. And so we're going from an analog system to a digital system, but that's where that additional funding is going. Is that kind of summarize it? Okay. So anyway, Mr. Miller, I hope you got that. I'll email you. If you listen to this audio, you'll be able to go ahead and get that answer too. That's all I had.
Okay.
No, I just say congratulations on having one of the longest Benton County Commissioner meetings that I've been in so far. So congratulations.
I'd like to allow you two to talk, you know, and get your comments out.
No, thank you.
I don't want to be accused of cutting you guys off. You know.
I thought it was because we had to wait for Paul.
As I told you, you know, if you got the votes, sit down and be quiet. If you don't, then what's that word?
Move on.
Filibuster. Filibuster. Right. Okay. Thank you. Josie, anything? Mr. Spencer, anything? Any other elected? I don't see any other. Nope. Strizer, you had a chance. Yep, you're good. Okay. Okay, with that, the meeting is adjourned, and we'll see you at 3:30. Thank you.